thanks for having me. Karen, thanks for inviting me. I think this has been already a tremendous tour. I think when you drive through these roads, and if those of you who were on the sailboat with us last night, you can see where agriculture meets the bay and how important both the bay and agriculture are to our heritage, to our economy, and just the overall culture that we have here. And I truly believe that we can have both viable agriculture and a restored bay. I don't think they have to be mutually exclusive. And in fact, when I started with the Chesapeake Bay program, we were strictly a voluntary partnership. And I was telling Holly at lunch, you know, I'm in the gray a lot. I don't see things black and white. And I think in agriculture, there's so many opportunities for a win-win solution. And you guys have shown that today in what you're doing on grain farming. I mean, you're reducing your nutrient inputs. You're increasing your nutrient uptake rates. You're maximizing your yield. And all that is great for the bay, too. You're reducing your nutrient losses to the bay. And so I think there are a lot of ways that you're building things into your everyday business. So you're in a really good position to stay viable over the long haul and are doing great things for the bay. As we saw on the first tour we went to, the encroachment of urban development, and that is a huge issue for us. As the agricultural loads continue to go down, continue to make progress on that front, we're seeing the urban loads increase. It's our fastest growing land use, and it's our fastest growing source of nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment loads to the bay. And you'll see a lot of very rigorous work on EPA's front to, first of all, enforce the current stormwater regulations that we have, but also revamp them entirely to have a much more stringent permit requirements for stormwater runoff. And, you know, we've got to get that going in the right direction. And we all acknowledge that having well-managed agricultural land is a very good solution for the bay. We don't want to see more paved areas that are causing, you know, more flashiness in streams and more pollution. So with that, right now, 2010 is a very big year for us. You know, we've heard it a number of times from Dave Johnson and others. You know, President Obama signed an executive order last year on the Chesapeake Bay that elevated us into the political limelight. We now have a TMDL, a total maximum daily load, that we're required to do. I don't know if folks realize, but in Virginia was the consent decree that said, save the bay, restore it voluntarily, and if you can't do it through a voluntary partnership, we have to do a regulatory TMDL in 2010. And that's where we are right now with the regulatory TMDL. And what that means is it's simply a pollution diet for the bay. There is a certain portion size of nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment that the bay can consume and still be healthy. And the way we define a healthy bay is that it has the right amount of dissolved oxygen, the right amount of chlorophyll A, fish food, and the right amount of clarity for our underwater grasses, our fish, our crab, etc. And each of the states, for every major river basin, so the Potomac in Virginia, the Rappahannock, the York, the James, have a certain, what we call a cap load allocation, a certain portion size of nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment that they need to get down to between now, and they have to have practices in place between now and 2025 to meet that reduction target. And so right now the states are in the process of taking that load reduction that they need and figuring out how much can they get from the urban sector, how much can they get from the agricultural sector, how much can they get from wastewater treatment plants and septic systems. And that's all part of the TMDL. These watershed implementation plans will have specific programs and policies and actions that the state's committing to do to reach those reduction targets. What's different than how we've been doing things in the past 10 years is there's a lot more stringent accountability required in a regulatory TMDL. And so the states will have two-year milestones, which are basically a certain amount of nutrient and sediment reduction they're committing to achieve every 2 years and the practices that they're committing to put on the ground to achieve those reductions. And so they're going to be measured every 2 years on how they're progressing, with the goal of getting 60% of the way there by 2017 and then all the way there by 2025. So there's a lot of accountability associated with the TMDL. But there's also a flip side, a good side of this for agriculture, because now, for the first time, other sources are going to be on the hook, too. We've talked about how a lot of folks tend to focus on agriculture because on a pound-per-pound basis, it's cheaper to reduce it from agriculture. And I've always hated that argument because it's a cost to the grower. And, you know, when you look at a wastewater treatment plant, you've got user fees and ways to fund that. You know, in the ag sector, you're dealing with voluntary cost share programs and, you know, money coming out of the farmer's pocket. But in any case, the TMDL will have a set pollution reduction set aside for the urban sector, for the wastewater treatment plants. And it'll be going down to a local level, the municipality level, next year, so that it's actually a real reduction that a municipality knows they're responsible for and will have to achieve. There are some other benefits in terms of, we talked about it at the last stop, there are probably opportunities for trading, where if the ag community is doing more than their fair share, they can sell their credits. And that's going to be a big factor in offsetting a lot of growth that is still going to be coming into the Bay watershed. I really think that in Virginia in particular, I think folks get the connection between having viable ag and really clean water and a restored bay. I think that the stuff we've been talking about today, whether it's nitrogen injection or the Green Seeker, which I can't wait to see what this looks like, and other technologies, even pre-side dress nitrate tests, corn stalk nitrate tests, all of those things are really important for minimizing nitrogen inputs and the cost of that, as well as, you know, reducing nitrogen loads to the bay. And I think that there's probably, in this area, it seems like everybody's doing a huge amount. And, you know, part of the answer to getting more reductions is getting more farmers involved in other areas of the watershed doing similar approaches that are good for business and good for the bay. And then also looking at that, what's the next get? You know, what's the next thing we need to be doing? And, you know, we've been talking a lot about these yield competitions, and everybody's really into these yield competitions. And I would love to see a competition not only on the maximum yield, but who had the lowest nitrogen inputs to get that maximum yield. You know, that would kind of one-up everybody. I mean, that's great for your business and for the bay. One other point, I want to make two other points. One is, we've talked a lot about voluntary conservation and the fact that the states don't typically track that through their government programs, and as a result, it doesn't go into the Chesapeake Bay watershed model that you know, cranks out these numbers about ag loads and how far we need to go. We absolutely need a better accounting of ag conservation, and I know it's tricky, you know, confidentiality of data, but unless we get that from the farming community, it goes through the states and into the model, we're not accurately tracking it. And I think continuous no-till is a great example. Many of you are doing it already. It makes economic sense. Very little of it is being funded through cost share programs. What are the ways that you can verify that's being done? Is it through FSA surveying? Is it through flyovers? Is it through just a few spot checks? What is it that can make us make sure that we're getting that captured in the model? I think it's really important to do what counts. You know, make sure you're doing things that have great nutrient sediment reductions, and then make it count by making sure that you're tracking it, verifying it, and reporting it to the state so that it can be used in the model. Very, very important. And I'm glad to see state legislation that's really committing staff and time and resources to get at improving that tracking system. And then lastly, I just want to mention that EPA, we don't have the agricultural resources at the extent that USDA does, but in this presidential executive order, we committed to work real closely with USDA to align the resources that we do have so that we're complementing the Farm Bill programs. And some of the resources that the state is using from us right now, the Commonwealth, are our state implementation grants and the 319 funding. That money goes through the states and directly pays for conservation district staff and other technical assistance folks to get more boots on the ground. I think that's really critical in trying to market the Farm Bill programs and get more farmers engaged in just baseline conservation. And then EPA also has an innovative nutrient and sediment reduction grant program, and we're real pleased that we've been able to coordinate that program with USDA's Conservation Innovation Grant Program so that we're funding how to address some of the really difficult challenges that we face, particularly in manure-dominated systems. And you're fortunate that you're not dealing with that down here, but you know, looking at manure injection technologies, looking at alternative uses for manure, looking at how to reduce ammonia emissions from farming operations, those are the types of things we've been funding as well. And we'll be announcing our latest grant awardees probably next week or the week after, so stay tuned for that. And I think that's all I'm going to say right now because time is limited, but I'm going to be here all day and through dinner and would love to talk to folks in more detail. I think I'm going to be interviewed on bus OC11 if anybody wants to crash that party. And I think the theme might be, can't we do it all voluntarily? Why do we need regulations? And I think that could be a really fun discussion to have. So please come join us for that, or maybe I can kind of, you know, move from bus to bus. Hopefully I won't get too car sick doing that, but I really appreciate your time. Thank you.